big rocks and all that sort of thing.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello. Hello. Hello, John.
Oh, hello, Mick.
It's a beautiful sunny day here in...
It is a beautiful day in...
Podworld.
Coxfordshire. As you call it.
Whoa. Now, John, before we go any further, a distressed reader has emailed in since the last podcast.
Oh, yeah.
To say you didn't sing on the last podcast. Here we are with our brand new...
Yeah, but the one we just recorded, I did.
Did you?
Yeah, I sung Wild Swan by Magnum. It's the rendition people have been waiting for.
Now you come to mention it, I feel you, brother. Yeah, I feel you.
Exactly.
Now, this is an extra special pod we're doing. Normally, this wouldn't go out for another week, but we're putting this one out literally the day before our
big
exciting
show. Yeah, can't wait. I'm standing here. I'm holding a copy of Stephen Wilson's book that he sent me. He signed it inside, or someone signed it. I don't know. Yeah.
What does it say?
It says, hang on, I'll turn to the right page. It says, to John Hotton, and there's got an asterisk above it, and by the asterisk it says, not his real name.
Well, that's because your real name is Little Johnny James Cricket Interrupter, isn't it?
Love an AI, and then it's just got a scribble.
No, that's so the autograph.
I presume it's by Stephen Wilson, but I don't know.
Yeah. Or me, because I was involved.
Yes, I heard you were involved, yes. But it's a very lovely looking book.
It is.
Very nice.
You should see the special edition.
So, you know, I'm taking it down to the show. I'm going to... Stephen, I've got a copy of your book, Stephen. And he'll obviously then say, well, I've got all your books, and we'll just talk about how great we are.
Yeah. And then we'll go on stage.
And then we'll go on stage. You know, I'm just talking about the afternoon when we're getting to know each other. I mean, me and Stephen, we're having a get-to-know-you session before the show.
He's not coming down in the afternoon.
That's what he told me.
He'll be helicoptering in.
Yeah.
Directly before
his... Landing on top of the West Hampstead Arts Club.
Unless there's too much snow.
Yeah.
And then he'll be down the special bat pole at the back of the stage. He'll be coming down there in a cloak.
Yeah.
He doesn't like to talk about it, but he'll be wearing his cloak.
Yeah.
And
will he be wearing shoes? Because I hear that every time he appears on stage, he doesn't wear shoes.
Do you know, that is an excellent question. That should be question one.
No, I've got...
Why are you wearing... Yeah, but that's my question.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Allowed to ask a question?
You are, but everyone knows. For this show...
Everyone knows.
For this show, first of all, we want readers' questions. So if you have a question for Stephen Wilson... Please, it's not too late. Get it in. Get it in ASAP, however you can. Because there'll be better questions than the one Mick Wall has just not thought of for himself.
Shut up.
Says he's going to ask.
Shut up.
And then I'm being allowed three questions for Stephen Wilson.
And they are.
I've now forgotten the first one.
Do you just turn the volume up?
Oh, yes, that's it. Yeah, it's the question about remixing. Do you just turn the volume up differently?
On the bass.
Yeah. Question two, which is, would you ever live on a croft, which is in honour of Fish from Marillion, who's going to live on a croft. An escapade I'm obsessively following on the pages of Facebook because he updates weekly what's happening at the croft. Yeah.
You think it's a bit like Clarkson's farm?
Yeah, I think he's aiming for something like
Fish's croft.
Because it's, from what I can work out, it's being completely rebuilt. I mean, it's a bit like the joke you came up with about Trigger's broom, you know, on Only Fools and Horses.
I've had this broom for 20 years.
Three new handles and four new brushes. You know, it's got a new roof. They're building a new driveway and it's having a... It's having loads. Very exciting. So would you ever live on a croft? And then I've got my third question now.
Yeah,
I'm, not, I'm not going to reveal that till the night. No.
Come on.
No.
Come on.
But it is in hand.
You're not going to forget it?
No, I've got it.
I'm making a little note, you
rock
see.
Rock solid.
Oh, you're rock solid.
Rock solid.
Okay. Well, some readers have sent in a couple of questions.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
That will help.
So it's going to be a glory night, is
but
what
we
we're saying.
We need more.
We need more. If you want to ask a question of Mick, do that. I mean, you know, you might want to say, have you ever had a show on Sky? You know, something like that.
Well, it's funny you should say that. I don't like to talk about it, but, you know, there's things I could tell you. There's things I could tell you. Well, so, look, let's, before we go any further, let's point out that this is all being brought to the readers through the wonders of Beyer Dynamic microphones.
I don't know what setup they've got. I don't know what Terry's got set up at the gig, but I might take my Beyer down there if I'm going to be doing any singing.
I don't know what setup Terry's got at the gig, but I might be bringing my magic mic and my magic headphones.
Yeah,
how about that?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Much. Yeah.
I'll be wearing them as I walk in.
Yeah.
Just I'd push through the crowds in case they want autographs or selfies. I put the headphones on.
Yeah, then they
dark
just
glasses.
Can't approach you.
No, they know. That's the signal.
Yeah.
Don't approach you. Do you know Bob Dylan? His son had a band and they were opening for Dylan and his mates in the band.
How did they get that gig?
Music?
Yeah.
Musical.
The agent heard what. Yeah, people will say it's because it was Bob Dylan. Some actually, the agent, booking agent, heard
he
this amazing band.
He just thought it was
band.
A good fit.
He's heard this amazing band and couldn't believe it when the guy said, "You want us to support Bob Dylan? But that's my dad."
He went, "Whoa,
whoa,
mind blown.
That's unbelievable." And Bob went,
and the boys in the band were saying to Dylan's son, "You know, your dad's weird, you know." At sound check, at sound check, one day he's all friendly, next day you can't talk to him.
Yeah.
And he tipped them off. He said, "If you see Father, if you see Peter Familius, wandering around and he's got his hoodie up, that's don't talk
to
him.
Do not approach. Yeah.
If he's got the hoodie down,
yeah,
that still don't approach, but if you must, you know, you won't face death."
Yeah.
That's me. See, that could be me.
And if he's not got the hoodie on at all, you're golden. Just go up to him.
Just go up to him. Rub yourself up against him.
Yeah.
Say, "I'm like you, no hoodie."
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, what does it mean? Yeah.
So, what do you want for lunch, Bob?
Bob, we can't hear you. Could you sing up a bit?
Knock, knock, knock. It's work for Bob. It's work for Bob.
Well, that's because he's a genius.
Yeah.
Right, now, let's get into it. What were we talking about? We were going to talk about, weren't we, something?
Yeah.
Yeah, go on. What was it? Remind me.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, all right. I'm going to read you something out. You tell me if you know.
Uh-huh.
Who this is. Okay, I'm going to read you something now.
Oh, yeah.
So, I won't say his name, but...
No.
The man in question sported a long beard and either a ponytail or occasionally piglets. He sometimes rode to tournaments, that's tennis tournaments, on a bicycle. He warmed up by listening to rhythm and blues while skipping. He practiced the saxophone in a telephone booth during Wimbledon. He ate health food, did yoga and eschewed alcohol long before such behaviour was fashionable on the tennis circuit.
Well.
Name that man.
Is it Andy Murray?
It's not. No.
Okay, let me have another go then. It's not Andy Murray.
No.
You're sure on that?
Yes.
Okay, you're sure it's not Andy Murray? Then it absolutely must be.
Go on, then.
I'm trying to remember his name.
Bjorn Borg?
Djokovic.
No, it's going a bit further back than that.
Oh.
I'll read you something else, see if you can get it from this. He, this is the name, was not one of the all-time great tennis players, though he was very, very good. but he was certainly one of the most original. He was variously described by his contemporaries as the ageless guru of tennis, the game's one great blithe spirit, and tennis's philosopher king.
Ooh, philosopher king.
Yeah.
We must
surely
be talking about John McEnroe.
No, we're not.
We must surely be talking about the silent Swede, Bjorn Borg.
We're not. We're talking about, well, he's from the same part of the world, almost.
A Scandinavian.
Across the water from Sweden.
You don't mean Denmark.
I do mean Denmark, yes.
You don't mean Rasmus Højlund, Manchester United's exciting new
signing. He's probably better at tennis than he is at football, by the looks of things.
He's probably better at anything than he is football. Let's be fair, Rasmus. Yeah,
they signed him up. They go, oh, you thought I was a footballer?
Yeah. No, I'm a pigtailed tennis player.
Tennis, mate. That's my main sport. Yeah, football.
I warm up in a telephone
box. Football's just a hobby.
Yeah, in Denmark, football. We
all play football.
Go on then.
We are talking about Torben Ulrich.
Father
of Lars Ulrich, who died reasonably recently.
Lars died?
Not Stars. Torben passed away at the grand old age, it must be said, of 95.
Wow.
And it was the subject of this tremendous obituary in the Times last week, which I sent over to you.
And which I read.
From which I have been reading. Tennis's philosopher king, all of those things. But Torben was much, much more than a tennis player. He certainly didn't get the obituary because he was Lars's dad. He got the obituary because he lived this astonishing life that even though, I mean, I think fans of Metallica would know who he was because he was famously appeared in the...
Some kind of monster.
But he also appeared, Lars would speak about him from time to time, about his dad. But even up until the last few years, Torben was making albums, which I didn't know, making jazz
albums. More albums than his son has made,
maybe. Yeah, exactly. And writing poetry.
Yeah.
And but then the great moment comes, obviously, when you think you're reading through this obituary and it's a terrific obituary. For example, in 1968, he took the great John Newcomb, he's an Australian tennis player.
I used to love John Newcomb.
To five sets in the fourth round of the US Open before losing. He had been distracted by a butterfly, he claimed afterwards, and proceeded to quote the Chinese philosopher Zhuang Zhui. Was I then a man dreaming I was a butterfly, or am I now a butterfly dreaming I was a man?
You see, the thing that obituary doesn't mention about
Torben out of his brain.
Is that he, throughout his tennis career, he would be tripping on LSD.
Yeah. Which is sort of why he didn't win loads of tournaments, but...
But also why he wore pigtails and wrote poetry.
But here's the great bit. So we get all the way down this obituary, like it's a long obituary, and we're coming towards the end. We get this bit. Here's an amazing paragraph. He was a mystic and a Buddhist who once spent 3 months crossing Denmark by lying on the ground, standing up, moving 3 feet forwards and then lying back down again, repeating the process over and over again for 90 miles.
Incredible, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, Lars
has never done that.
Well, no, funnily enough, me and Lars did a very similar thing.
Yeah, we lied down for 20 minutes. You know,
well, in fairness, we were walking home from a microbrewery in San Francisco, where it must be admitted strong drink had been taken. And we would walk 3 feet,
like
flat down,
get
up, another 3 feet, wallop again. And we did that for 19
couple of blocks.
Miles.
Yeah, a couple of blocks. Yeah. So you get all of this tremendous, and then you come to a long way down the obituary. It then says, he also happened to be the father of Lars Ulrich, drummer for the venerated heavy metal band Metallica. Those too young to remember his exploits on the tennis court might instead remember his cameo role in Some Kind of Monster, a 2004 documentary about Metallica. This is the Times reporting
Times,
this.
Yeah.
He listens to a track in the recording studio. His son asks him what he thinks of it. After a very long pause,
while he's meditating and butterfly catching,
he replies, I would delete that. I would delete that. For me, it doesn't cut it.
Yeah.
It sounds like a guy shouting in some sort of echo chamber.
Now, you see, Torben was ahead of the curve there.
That's pretty much every review they got of that album. Exactly. It's one of the great deconstructions of that record. And the guy did it in a sentence. That's marvellous.
What a brilliant guy.
Yeah.
Years ago, when I was interviewing Lars for my Metallica book, I don't know if you recall, John.
Metallica, what was it called again?
It was called Enter Night.
Enter Night. How did you come up with that title? That's really interesting.
Well, if I could reveal all my secrets, they wouldn't be secrets.
No, that's true. That's true. But Torben said to you, I would delete that title.
I said, Torben, just lie down. Get up again and lie down.
Yeah, and see what you think of it then.
Come back
with
in
my
19
boots on
miles.
Your face. Yeah.
I didn't quite put that bit. I think that you added that. But Lars was telling me how, obviously I don't have the quote in front of me, but he was like, I'd been round the world 4 times by the time I was like 9 or something.
Yeah.
Because he'd go on the tour.
Yeah. And that's the amazing thing is Torben played on the tour. He played his first match on the tour. This is astonishing. In 1948. And he was still playing in about 1970.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Incredible.
Longevity. Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. And Lars was telling me he had a... telling me about his very sort of bohemian upbringing. You know,
yes.
He grew up in a castle. And... he said in the mornings, because I was saying to him, how come...
Well, it says here that Dexter Gordon, the famous saxophonist, is Lars's godfather, yeah.
Yeah, as exclusively revealed in...
Oh, in Enter Night,
still available...
Should be deleted.
...via Amazon and many other disreputable booksellers. Yeah. So listen to me. Stop reading and learn at the knee of knowledge. He said, it wasn't like, well, I suppose it was. He said, it wasn't that you got pampered because you were the son of a rich person or famous person. He said, it was like the opposite. Because I was saying to him, how the hell did you just leave home and go to London to meet your favourite band and all this?
But that's exactly what Torben would have done.
And he said, that's how I was brought up. He said, so for school in the morning... He said, I used to come down, you know, and literally tread over the dead bodies, the wine glasses, the ashtrays, the music would still be playing. He said, get to the kitchen, fix myself something to eat, get ready and go to school. He told me he was at Hyde Park in 1969 when the Stones famously did their first show since... Brian Jones had died when they let free all the butterflies. Lars was
probably
there.
Where Torben got the quote about the butterflies.
Well, you know, it's funny. Yeah. It's funny, isn't it?
Yeah.
When was the game against Newcombe?
That was
the year
69, I think. It was maybe the year before, yeah. Yeah.
In fact, what you've stumbled upon there, John, is a well-kept secret, which I will now reveal, is that Torben came to Mick Jagger.
Oh, I thought you were going to say came to you, yeah.
Well, no, that was later. Yeah. But he came to Mick Jagger and he said, look, this Hyde Park thing, I got a word for you.
Yeah, butterflies, yeah. So did you meet Torben ever?
No, I'm pretty sure I didn't know. He was kicking around in the studio, long after I come to think of it. No, I never met Torben.
Yeah, because it's... So I'll read you just a tiny bit more.
Yeah, please
do. Lars was... You might be astounded to know Lars was an only child. Any of those characteristics at all. Lars was also a talented tennis player.
He was, yeah.
But became hooked on music after attending a Deep Purple concert in Copenhagen.
All true, but what it doesn't tell you is that because of the kind of family he came from, they knew which hotel Deep Purple was staying in.
They would do, yeah.
And Torben took Lars to get their autographs the next morning after the show.
Right.
So it's quite a privileged, entitled upbringing.
Yeah.
I don't think he's pampered in...
No, not in terms of, you know, like being a
material
prince
goods
who's,
or
yeah,
something.
Yeah.
But in terms of outlook...
Access.
You can go anywhere, you can do anything.
You can see he's got that kind of rock-solid confidence from his dad, who has lived a life like that
and
proven that you can do it.
Yeah.
You know, it says it says in 1971 Ulrich began painting, which is quite interesting given Lars's
massive art collection. Yeah.
Asked to produce a blue elephant for charity, he instead experimented with the impact of paint-splattered tennis balls, leading to exhibitions with titles such as Imprints of Practice. But he was obviously the kind of guy who would just free-spirited do his own thing and see where it led. And you can very much see that in the way Lars... I mean, Lars was probably more single-minded than Torben. You would probably say to him, look, if you want to win a tennis tournament, these people are just completely one-track mind. They're not going to a jazz gig in the evening. You know, they're going to bed and going to sleep.
Yeah, but they're not lying down, getting up and lying down.
So he's this amazing... Whereas Lars was like, once he decided Metallica was the thing, he was like, boom, that's it. This band is going to make it.
I think that's absolutely right. But I tell you what else, I think Torben's spirit... has kind of guided Metallica, because, you know, there's a reason the world, I won't even say you and me, but the world sees a difference between not just Slayer and Megadeth, but a difference between Metallica and Iron Maiden, between Metallica and not just thrash groups, but Guns N' Roses or contemporary huge rock bands. Metallica were on the cover of Time Out magazine, Village Voice magazine. They've always had this broadsheet aspect to what they do. And that didn't come through James Hetfield.
No.
who could barely fucking read, let alone appeal to these people. This was just Lars's world. He was a privately educated son of a wealthy bohemian who had been around the world four times by the time he was seven or eight. And I think so in Metallica, I think it's a combo. You're absolutely right. You can see that laser-like focus that Lars has always had, and that energy, always the first one up, always the last one to bed. Yes, I'll do a million interviews with fanzines.
Yeah.
But I think in terms of their sort of, as it were, permissiveness, in terms of...
I mean, let's be completely fair to Metallica. You know, we have our fun with Lars and with Metallica. But if you look at their output and their catalogue, you know, the Lou Reed album... the
masterpiece.
Yeah, you know, but the orchestra... You know, they've never been prepared, never been scared to take a risk and take a
leap.
Even
St. Anger.
Yeah, I mean, it's not the kind of thing that Torben was doing where, you know, one day it's a jazz album, the next day it's a painting, but it's a risk-taking in artistic terms, for sure.
Absolutely.
And they're not scared to do that, and they're certainly not afraid that their fans won't follow them.
Absolutely, and I think that is the delineation between the truly great and the very, very good.
Mm.
Led Zeppelin, truly great because of Page's vast hinterland of cultural references.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Judas Priest or someone, just really good.
Excellent group.
Yeah.
But not that breadth of...
Yeah, there's nothing else there. There's just that, yeah.
Exactly. And groups that have tried to, say like Iron Maiden, where Bruce, in the late 80s, in their heyday, Bruce Dickinson, another ex-public school boy, desperately wanted to bring in those extra elements that in his mind would make Iron Maiden not just a great metal band, but I was going to say a classic rock band, but, you know, like a true rock giant.
Yeah.
And Steve Harris railed against it.
Yeah, I mean, you can never imagine Metallica making their version of the Black Album, which was just a purely...
Say Metallica or Iron Maiden.
Iron Maiden. Making their version of the Black Album. However that would sound, because they just weren't... That wasn't Steve Harris's mindset.
It wasn't
ever
of interest.
Yeah, yeah. Whereas I think that's interesting, because when we spoke about Bruce Dickinson on the previous podcast... We kind of drove at that relationship between Bruce and Steve, and that it, you know, that here were two opposites in the public schoolboy. And you've got the same thing in Metallica, but it seems to work a lot differently, and I would add a lot better in Metallica. I mean, I know, again, in the documentary, Lars and James are sort of at each other and they will argue, and you can sort of see, you know, a bit of the relationship there. But I mean... It seems to be a successful relationship between someone who's had the upbringing we've just described and then the upbringing that James had.
Completely different.
Completely different. You know, not a lot of money, this sort of religious background and...
Jehovah's Witnesses.
Yeah, sort of dirt poor America, that sort of thing. You know, not two people who necessarily would ever have met had it not been for music.
Well, you know what they say? Opposites attract, but... When it works, it's spectacular.
Yeah.
And when it doesn't, it's a disaster.
Yeah.
I mean, I can give you... I think rock has a lot of these. So Axl and Slash. Slash came from a very, if you like, bohemian, upper middle class background. Axl, dirt poor redneck.
Yeah.
Led Zeppelin, if you like, Page, the London Sophisticate.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Plant the... Oh, not me, Mike. Plant the unknown from the Midlands who just wants to
rock.
Drink his wine, yeah. Rock a bitch, smoke a fat one.
Yeah.
Peace and love for all. Page is like, yeah, but have you considered the dark side?
Yeah.
Probably didn't use those words.
Written on this ancient... tome, this ancient piece of skin that may or may not be human.
And that ink may or may not be
blood. Exactly, yeah.
The blood of a lamb.
Yeah.
Right. So, yes. No, seriously, those things really do matter.
Yeah.
And I did used to think if Bruce was allowed a bit more space, as it were, Maiden would. I mean, I think with the Seventh Son album, they kind of got there in the end, but it was one album too late.
But I mean, the thing with Bruce is, I mean, Bruce is the singer, so obviously there's always going to be a very forward part of his expression in the band, because you're... Lars is the drummer.
Mm.
I mean, this is traditionally the part of the band where you wouldn't necessarily look to that. It's hard to think of other bands where the drummer has been so influential, apart from maybe Don Henley.
I was going to say Don Henley.
But he was also the singer. I mean,
Or Dave Clark.
Yeah, I don't know Dave Clark.
You don't know Dave Clark Five?
No.
Bits and pieces. You said you loved me, then you said goodbye. I'm in pieces, bits and pieces. You don't know that one?
No, I do, yeah.
Glad All Over.
Let you get on with it, yeah. Phil Collins, you know.
Did you hear my microphone pop?
Yeah, but when Phil Collins was in, you know, when Gabriel was the singer, Gabriel was the vocal point, you know. But Lars is different to that in that he's never picked up a guitar and said, this is a riff, you know. He's never sung something and said, he's just been the drummer. But he's been this huge influence over the both the hinterland of the band and the artistic direction, I suppose.
Totally. And the fact that he wasn't a great drummer.
Well, you said, I wouldn't say that. You would say that.
Well, no, I think he would say that. I would never say that.
No.
He's actually my favourite drummer.
Yeah.
He told me, hey, he's your favourite drummer.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, because I remember one of the very first interviews I did with him. I was saying, why do you keep changing the tracks? It's all going along great. And on it goes. Then suddenly you stop and it's like cats mewing in the air. Ding, 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 ding. Wee, wee. I said, why don't you just cut all that out and just... Cat, and he looked at me like I was a fucking,
fucking idiot.
Idiot.
Yeah, yeah.
Because his hero was Neil Peart.
Yeah.
Is that how you say it?
It is.
Peart.
Yeah.
Not Peart.
No.
Neil Peart. Neil Peart.
Yes. And they did all that stuff.
And when he got to the Black Album, it was literally Bob Rock that said to him, can you just keep a
just
beat?
Just the one thing.
Just
one thing at a time, Stars.
So they put him in a room. They had a room, Lars's room, where literally he learned to play drums.
Yeah.
Keeping one note as opposed to...
Yeah.
It brings, you immediately feel you're listening to Neil Peart, don't
you? But Neil had his solo. Yeah, highlight of every Rush gig was Neil's solo. Went on for.
Highlight and Rush. I'm stumbling there.
Yes, it's Neil's solo. Yes. Here it is, the high point of the evening.
Didn't he used to have two kits, didn't he? So he'd do a solo on this one, solo on that one.
Yeah, solo with his... He'd just be doing that. He just became pure drums.
He was pure Peart.
Pure drums.
Pure Peart.
Yeah.
How did it go?
Yeah, and then he had his... Then he had his, you know, those huge bells that would hang up and he... Dunka, dunka, dun, 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 dun. It was magical.
Peart never did dugga 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 dug dug.
Something like that.
That's Adam and the Ants, mate.
Well, whatever.
No, it's Susie and the Banshees. Digga 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 dig ding 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 ding.
Yeah, well, you know where they go out from. You know,
Hong Kong Garden.
But anyway, you had something else to say about Stars, because I, you know, I sent you the Torben.
You did.
Obituary.
Well, that led me down a rabbit hole.
Yeah.
Looking for rabbits. And you know what I found? A giant fucking rabbit called... What's it called? It's got a name, isn't it? It's like the... It's a podcast, but it's on the Metallica website, is it?
Yeah, I think it's just called a podcast. It's the Metallica podcast.
That's what it's called.
It's probably called something like Metallicast, let's be honest.
Ugh. And it's hosted by an old friend of ours, isn't it?
Well, I can imagine that it would be, yes, because there is one of our former number at Kerrang, Stefan Chirazzi, who is now...
Better known as Cheesy.
I mean, in the same way that Stars handles all of, you know, Metallica's...
Business.
Business and output... Cheesy is Stefan. Stefan handles the So What website / magazine.
Fan stuff.
Yeah, the fan stuff, the interviews.
By fans.
Yeah. So I can imagine if they were looking around for someone to host the podcast, they didn't have to...
Look no further.
They didn't have to stand on top of the Golden Gate Bridge with a pair of binoculars.
James going, hey, look what we get. Do the podcast. What's a podcast? Let's kill a bear. And Lars goes, let's get Cheesy. We're already paying him. Let's just get him to do that as well.
See, I think it must be really weird to like work for Metallica. It's just...
Not if you're their number one fan like Cheesy.
But that would make it even worse. I mean,
not for Cheesy. Cheesy loves him, John. You know he does.
You know, I'm trying to imagine me working for...
Me?
Yeah, you, yeah.
Yeah, but you love me.
It would be really weird.
No, you love me. You'd be like, I have the best job in the world.
Yeah, until you have to say, no, you can't have a pay, you know, no, you can't come on the road. No, you can't have a pay rise. But you're still paying me $9,000 a year.
Yeah. And you should be glad of
but
it.
Don't you get much more than that with Metallica? Like, don't they earn a lot more money than 9,000? Because Lars said to me we had a bad year last year.
They only had 400 million.
Yeah, I happened to catch sight of this castle he was living in on top of that overlooks the whole of San Francisco.
Yeah.
But he said to me it had been a bad year.
Don't be fooled by appearances,
so I could only
John.
Get $9,000.
a few years ago, I don't know how many years ago, but it was the anniversary of Master of Puppets. So it was 86, 96. So I'm going to say 2016. Metallica's management office got in touch with...
Are they still managed by...
Q Prime.
Yeah.
They are.
Yeah.
Cliff Bernstein and Peter Mensch. But I think it's long since devolved into day-to-day...
They'll have a day-to-day jobby. People. Yeah. But they're all getting 9,000.
Amongst
Mensch and Bernstein, they're not getting...
They're like, as much as what? They were doing... Now, listen, they were about to release a special anniversary edition of Master of Puppets.
Right, yeah.
And they wanted to know if they could reproduce my legendary review of the album that appeared in Kerrang.
Yeah.
Which, thank God,
we all love.
I gave it 5 stars.
We all love that review, yeah.
People still talk about it.
They do. I still talk about it.
I heard they teach it to the current Kerrang
staff.
Yeah. They go, now you want to
first day
what it's
you
like
get
to
there.
Review
yeah.
a fucking record. Read
this
that.
This is read that. That is.
Don't touch it unless you've got white gloves on. Don't touch the mag. Just read it.
Reviewed. Yeah.
That's that album has been reviewed.
That's how you
properly.
Do it.
That's how you do it.
Yeah.
And also it's prophetic because it predicts the great future.
Yeah.
So anyway, I said, you can do that.
If you make it rain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I said, you give me 500 pounds of the Queen's
you
coin.
500 pounds? You could barely bring yourself to say
not
it.
Dollars.
Yeah.
No, I said I want 500 quid.
You should.
You know what they said?
You've gone in low there.
Do you know what they said?
Yeah, they said, we'll send you a copy of the album.
No. No, what? No. What do they always say?
We'll send you a copy of the album.
No. They definitely didn't say that. Now, when you ask for a certain amount of money, what do the people usually come back and say?
Well, they usually come back with about half of that. So that's
because,
why you... That is
because,
why you start.
Because yeah. they don't have any budget.
Oh, yeah. No, they always
that's
say that.
That's the
yeah.
famous...
Oh, yeah. Not got any budget. Yeah.
See, we haven't got any budget.
Yeah. Metallica.
So I got back and I went... Let me see. You're putting out an anniversary copy of their most revered album that has sold millions.
They've just been on a tour that has
bought in literally
$1 billion.
Yeah. And after all the reviews and cover stories and television and radio and everything I did all through those years, you don't have the budget to pay me to republish my famous review.
Yeah. The most famous review ever written.
No, anything. We don't. So I wrote back and said, okay, well, then you may not use the review, but heads up, when I get that album, if I see you've used the review, we'll be adding some noughts to that price.
Yeah.
I never heard from them again.
Did they use the review?
Fuck knows. Yeah. I didn't look. I should, though, shouldn't I?
You should now, because you could still get back onto them. You'd get back onto Cheesy at least.
Oh, yeah. He'd be so helpful, wouldn't he?
Yeah.
You get on well with Cheesy?
Hey, Mick, yeah. Yeah, of course, he's a Spurs fan, isn't he? Big Spurs fan.
That's the reason for you not to get on
No, I appreciate his passion for the Spurs.
Do you?
The Tottenham
I remember going out
Spurs.
For dinner with you, me, Cheesy and Paul Elliott many years ago.
Yeah.
And all you two did was make his whole evening rotten, mercilessly awful.
We love him, but I just think it'd be
he was talking
to,
about I remember him
he
saying,
keeps hearing the words no, there's no budget for that, and I don't know.
he was like, you know, I just want Tottenham to finish, you know, top half of the table. I remember you went, I just want Arsenal to finish above Spurs. I don't care where it is, 17th, 18th, as long as it's above Spurs. Yeah. Cheesy. He had the tears
running
down
his
cheesy
eyes.
Face.
Yeah.
What, John, why do you always call him Cheesy? What's the story there?
I can't remember what the story is.
Because he eats cheeseburgers by the dozen.
Is that what it was? I can't remember now. I remember him eating the taco bucket at, what do you call it? What's the place called with the, you know.
Taco Bell?
No, in L.A. The one
Taco Bell.
In an Out Burger.
No, it's a famous restaurant, and it has the basketball machines where you could play basketball in it. Barney's Beanery.
Oh,
yeah, right. Barney's Beanery.
Well, that's the place to go for a cheesy burger.
We're in Barney's Beanery. Me, Paul Elliott, can't remember who else, and Cheesy and Mark Lealoha turned up.
Who was the photographer?
The photographer who was always with Stefan. Lovely man. Lovely man. Very gentle. But very much not like Ross Alfred.
He was kind of like very Ross.
Exactly. It was like, if you could imagine the polar opposite of Ross Alfred, but who did same job. It was Mark Lealoha.
He got a lot of work through not being Ross.
Exactly, yeah. And, I mean, this is back in the day when, I don't know, Britain and America, I would say, they used to be a lot more different than they are today. And you used to go to America and be amazed by some of the shit that went on there. And that night, Stefan looks at the menu in Barney's and goes, I'll have the taco bucket. And it comes to the table and it was a bucket. And the bucket itself was made of the taco shell.
And you ate the bucket?
Yeah, you ate the bucket. And, you know, it was filled up with the taco filling. And you break off a bit of the bucket and dig it in and eat it. And you
he had one to himself.
But that's what I mean. That's what America used to have the capacity. Nowadays, they probably do that in Nando's or something. You know, but it's like, back then, it was like when you used to go into the supermarket and they'd have multi-pack packs of crisps. And you'd go, man, they've got this pack of crisps. It's got like 30 packets of crisps inside.
Kill me
Americans
now.
Are crazy. And anyway, Stefan eats the taco bucket, which is a legendary thing that me and Paul always laughed at. And then he goes, come on, wherever we were going. He goes, come on, we'll give you a lift. Mark's got his car. We're going into Lealoha's car. And the back seat's just covered in burger wrappers. And so probably that is where he got cheeseburger. Because they'd literally driven down from San Francisco, arrived at Barney's Beanery, and then went off to whatever gig we were going to. Yeah.
Rock in Rio, the second one in 91. So people are arriving at different times. Inevitably, Cheesy has come. Oh no, he'd come with Faith No More.
Yeah.
Because they were the other San Francisco best buds in those days. And him and Big Jim Martin, who was another burger hound.
Yeah.
Because he didn't care, you know. We bumped into them on the beach, or there was a place where people were gathering and talking. And they were like, oh, you just got here this morning. They were like, yeah, yeah. What do you think of it so far? And Cheesy goes, well, the first thing we did, and before he could tell us what the first thing he did was, Ross goes, add a cheeseburger. and it just kind of stopped him in his tracks. And he looked at Jim Martin and he went, actually, we did go into Burger King, yeah, just to see what it was like. He went, and what was it like, Cheesy?
See, that's probably because of
cheeseburgers. Yeah, because his name was Stefan Chirazzi, so it became Stefan Cheeseburger. Yeah, exactly. So, turned into Cheesy.
See, that is Ross's great ability. Even beyond being a photographer, his ability to put his thumb on the sore spot is just
like
beyond.
Trump.
Yes,
like Trump. He finds that horrible vulnerability
And hits
Sleepy
it.
Joe.
Yeah,
Crooked Hillary.
Yeah, yeah. You know, falsely friendly. he hits that note that you don't want to be here, but he just does it.
He does.
Yeah.
I thought of another one there, and it's gone now. Keep talking.
Blaze of Glory. That was another good one for Bon Jovi. You've mentioned, John Bon Jovi said, Blaze of Glory. And it's so perfect.
I've just remembered one. Because another one of the San Francisco brethren, who was one of Cheesy's, you know, best mates, was Glenn Danzig.
Oh, Fonzig, yeah.
So we're at the Sunset Marquee, Malcolm Domes there. Cheesy, me, Ross, and probably Lealoha and a few others. Yeah. And we were all being lined up. Oh, no, I wasn't for some reason, but Malcolm and Cheesy were both interviewing Glenn Danzig. And I can't remember the way around we did it, but we told Malcolm to say to Cheesy, by the way, you know what Malcolm was like, by the way, I just found out when I went in there, Glenn's had a fantastic nose job. He said, and what I didn't realise till the publicist told me afterwards was that I should have complimented him on it. He was upset that I didn't notice. So Malcolm goes, so, you know, if you want to, you want to say to him, so Cheesy goes in.
He didn't
in.
Fall for that one.
Cheesy oh goes in. Oh, my God. Because Glenn has had some cosmetic work, but not this occasion. First thing he says is, oh, congrats on the new nose job. And Danzig's like, are you fucking taking the piss? Because A, I haven't had a nose job, but B, I have had plastic surgery. No one's meant to know about it. Apparently the interview didn't go well.
No, surprisingly,
went straight downhill from there.
Yeah.
The publicist who knew Ross rang him. He goes, what did you say to Stefan? Nothing. Cheesy. Did you say anything about Glenn's nose? Glenn's nose. He goes, why, what's wrong with Glenn's nose? Has he had an op?
Yeah.
He goes, no, he hasn't had an op. Stop telling people this.
Oh, dear. Anyway, this is the long way round to saying Stefan is hosting the podcast. The Metallicast.
The Grovelcast.
That's what you're calling it. That's what Ross is calling it.
Yeah, and why, there was a reason for this, wasn't there?
Well, you'd listen to it or something. You said, because... I'd send
you.
No,
you listened to it and said, I'm not listening to this anymore.
Yeah, because it was. So you sent it to me, so I thought, well, I'll
listen
to it.
You would listen to it, yeah.
And guess who the first guest on the Metallicast was?
Was it Lars?
Oh, amazingly enough, it was Lars.
Wow. Hey.
Yeah. And Stefan's giving it the big build up. We're like, hey, you, of course, everyone knows the one thing about Lars. And I'm thinking, what? He never shuts up. No, the one thing everyone knows about Lars is his love of, and I'm thinking, I don't know, himself or his love of music.
Oh, yeah,
music.
That's the one thing we all know.
In fairness, we do know that because he used to be obsessed with the new wave British
heavy
metal.
Oh, true, yeah. That was a long time ago.
When someone convinced, who was it? I think he convinced Polygram to do a best of new Wobbum album, Lars. Him and Jeff Barton picked the tracks.
I remember it, yeah.
And Stars had to come into the office to choose the set. Should we have, you know, Raven?
But Stallion were very influential.
Yeah, right. Yeah, they were like having this debate about these terrible...
Was that Stallion from Newcastle or Stallion from Port Talbot?
Yeah.
Because I think they had the edge.
It was very much that, yeah.
Chariot.
Yeah.
Do you remember the B-side?
Yeah, yeah.
Toad, the wet
And Jeff
sprocket.
Going, yes, I've bought it in. It's in my briefcase. This is the one they sent. It was very much like that, yeah. So Lars goes on to do a deep dive.
On his
deep,
record collection.
Stefan's going, one of the things we love most on this podcast is when Lars is doing a deep dive into his record collection.
One of the things we love most on this podcast is when I shove my head right up his arse till the cheese is trickling down my sweaty jowls. And then I say to him something like, hey, Lars, hey, what's your favourite track?
And Lars's favourite track at the moment was by Lynyrd Skynyrd. Have you ever heard of them?
A
little known band of the southern thrash rock genre.
Oh, southern thrash.
Southern thrash.
And what obscure track did he go for?
He said they were album cuts or something, but then he started talking about Simple Man maybe or something. I just turned it. I had to turn it off.
Turned it off.
I couldn't.
Subject yourself.
Well, why do I want to spend my day listening to Lars going on about Lynyrd Skynyrd? I tried to escape that fate.
Well, you see, I think you missed a trick there because what is less well known, which I can now reveal, is that the riff to Enter Sandman
was invented by Vic Reeves.
lifted, hook, line and sinker from Sweet Home Alabama.
Wasn't that written by your aromatherapy best buddy Kirk?
What, Enter Sandman?
Yeah.
Yeah, but he nicked it. You're missing the point here. Nicked it.
But does it sound like...
Ow, ow, ow. Sweet home, gang. It's identical.
Yeah.
It's like AI. You can't see the joy.
I have to go back to the podcast and check that out. Yeah.
In fairness.
Everyone says it.
So you don't know that about Sweet Home Alabama.
Sweet Home Alabama and Enter Sandman. Everyone says it.
Everyone says it.
They do.
Enter night.
Yeah, you should remember that.
Exit, yeehaw. Huh? Uncanny. Speaking of uncanny, on the AI front, and I think we should put this picture up at the gig. The next gig on February the 21st, Wednesday, West Hampstead Arts Club.
Got my Stephen Wilson book.
Special star Stephen Wilson.
Got my Stephen Wilson book ready to take it down there.
I forgot what I was going to say.
AI, you were saying.
Yes. We know Stephen did that wonderful Christmas song, December Skies.
Yeah.
Lyrics in the style of Stephen Wilson.
Yeah.
Love that.
By AI. That was clever. See, he's quite clever, Stephen Wilson. I get the feeling he's going to outwit us quite easily.
Oh, it'll be like two chess players going up against a grandmaster.
Yeah.
He'll be blindfolded with headphones on, not seeing or hearing, but just outwitting us.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Like that. See how my hands go like that? Or like that.
Yeah.
So we've got our questions lined up, haven't we?
You've completely gone off topic here.
Just to fit it in.
You were saying there's a picture you want to put up at the gig.
Oh yeah. So yes, a reader has kindly sent in, John. I've been getting a lot of examples of AI.
Yeah.
So there's an incredible one of James Hetfield singing Hips Don't Lie.
Yes, I think we mentioned that last time. We've forgotten about.
We did, actually. You're right. But it's amazing what you can do with photos. I mean, Brett Stewart, who I believe is in Australia.
Right.
You know Australia.
I do.
You had to flee the country, didn't you?
I did.
He sent in a picture, John. You won't. It's uncanny. It's a picture of Lisa Dominique back in the day.
Lisa Dominique. Who's that?
Well, she's with someone, but they have, by use of AI, they have superimposed your face onto this person. Look at this, Johnny. Look at this.
You know what that looks like? You know when people have a face transplant, but it doesn't look right.
It looks like you've been in a terrible accident.
It does. It looks like I'm one of those people. I'm like touch wood madly here now. He's like had their face ripped off by a wolf or something, some terrible accident, and then had someone else's murderous face put back over the top.
They've gone. Don't worry,
we've got the technology. We've got the face for you. Say no more. We've worked it out. This is the one.
And the test will be. If we bring Lisa in and she doesn't know the difference. And she just throws herself at you. And you're like you usually
this
are, which
is terrible.
Not here, Lisa. So we'll treat readers that come to the show on February the 21st.
That will be displayed.
At the West Hampstead Arts Club.
Yeah.
This will be displayed. Too much, I feel, hilarity.
Yes, I'm sure.
Now, is there anything else we need
to
address?
No, that's it. I've got to go now.
Oh, you got to go. Who are you off to talk to now?
I've got to go to the library.
Have you really?
Yeah.
What for? Your latest Etonian secret lodge meeting?
Yeah, that'll be it.
What is it? You're now doing the Etonian Heavy Metal Society?
No.
What's that? Tarquin and fucking...
Oh, stop it with your ridiculous prejudices. This is why I never mention it.
That's because you're not allowed to.
Anyway... Farewell, readers.
Tarquin and who?
Tarquin. See you at the show.
See you at the show. Rock and roll.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
How do I stop this, Fern?